It's like how to build up the sense of community and friendships. And what's a Buddhist way of dealing with the fact that there's so many lonely people in this world who just need friendships and they need a sense of community? Because when they haven't got friendships and a sense of community, there's all these social problems, psychological problems, health problems. And even if they weren't creating problems for other people, it's just almost intolerable, unacceptable to know there's people out there in the world without a friend, without someone to share their life with, without even anyone to talk to. So how do we actually build more friendship and community, you know, in this world? And the Buddha actually mentioned it's an important part. I get the Buddhist quote out of the way as soon as possible. The Buddhist quote, because I don't like actually teaching from the text, because you can read those texts by yourself. But the famous quote is that one day Ananda, the Buddha's attendant, turned around to the Buddha and said, 50% of the holy life, the religious life, is about having good friends. And the Buddha turned around and said something quite striking. He said, no, 100% of this holy life, the spiritual life, 100% is about having good friends. The word kalyanamitta, good friends. And that even surprised me when I first read it, because I thought, aren't we supposed to have lots of solitude and just be like little hermits? He said yes, but there's also an important part to have with friendship. So actually, how do we create more friendship? And how do we, from those friendship, create more of a sense of community? And it's quite obvious to me that, you know, you have to learn how to like people, which is a very difficult thing for many people to do. They don't even like themselves, so how can they like other people? And because we don't like others, when we come across them, when we meet them, they feel that this person doesn't like us, and you say, yeah, I'm right, I don't like you. And of course, you can't have any friends that way. In my particular role and job, as being a monk, I have to like every Tom, Dick or Harriet who comes in front of me. But I do that easily and lovingly. It's so easy to do, to like other people. And that means you can actually give the sense of friendship. Because look, if you go and approach somebody, that sometimes, you know, you feel that you're rejected, that no one really likes you, they don't really understand you, they don't care for you. And of course, even the beginnings of friendship just wither immediately in the fact that, you know, you haven't got no appreciation. So in this world, how can you actually learn to like people? And the trick is that, you know, people have got their faults, they've got their good parts, but there's always something in a person you can find how to respect and care and love for. Another reason for me bringing up this talk on about how to create friendships was that somebody came up, I think two or three weeks ago, after the Friday night talk, and they'd been to a little session which I did at St. George's Cathedral, where they were having a series of talks on the different religions. And they went to my talk on Buddhism. And after the talk, we're standing there with, you know, the dean of St. George's Cathedral, and that's John Shepherd, and also one of the bishops, Bishop Keim. And, you know, I mentioned to people, I said, look, you know, these are my friends. And they said, yeah, you know, you're part of the parish. You know, and John Shepherd said, if you weren't a Buddhist, I'd give you a job any time as a priest. And I said, that these are my friends. And one of the people attending there said, how can you say that you're a friend to these people when you share a totally different religion and a different philosophy? Because you don't agree with some of the things they say on their sermons. And I'm sure they don't agree with much of what I say in my Friday night sermons. But if I look in my heart, these actually are friends. And I really mean that. These are sort of guys that, you know, if I had a few minutes, we could actually have a cup of coffee with. And we'd look forward to enjoying that cup of coffee. There's also those Christian monks, the Catholic monks at New Norcia, I've got to know for so many years. And look, those are my friends as well. I was just talking earlier about a talk which we gave in UWA a couple of 3 years ago with Abbot Placid. He was the abbot of the Benedictine Monastery in New Norcia. And he died last year. And when I went to their monastery in New Norcia, I insisted, can I please just go and spend a few minutes by his graveside? And he was a Benedictine Catholic abbot, and I was a Buddhist abbot. But you know, I really feel I needed to do that because he was like a friend. And how can you have this sense of friendship with people of totally different philosophies and views in life? It's very easy for me to do. Because, I don't know, maybe trained through so many years as meditating, you always see the beauty in other people, see something good in them, see something that's worthy of respect. And you can always see that. I can always see something I can like in anybody. Now, once I was with another monk in UK, and one of the things which he does and does very well is visiting prisons. And we went to the prison for the criminally insane, Broadmoor, in England. Many of you may know it's got a notorious notorious reputation. But one of the prisoners in there, probably the one of the most notorious prisoners which I've met, was one of the, for those of you who know old English crime, one of the Cray twins, Ronnie Cray. And there you see this very famous criminal, and shakes his hand. And then he tells the other monk, said, look, you come and help me so often. Look, if I ever find a couple of quid, I'll send it to your monastery. And there was one of these very, very hard criminals, just wanted to be generous. You can always find something to like, even in the hardest of criminals, people who've done terrible crimes. And so if you can find something to like in them, it's very easy to find something to like in a Catholic abbot or an Anglican bishop. And now because you can find something to like in them, you can have this beautiful sense of friendship. And of course, once that friendship is established, they actually show you more sort of respect, and you can show them more respect. A snowball effect happens when you really start relating to one another, communicate to one another, and you actually find that some of the philosophies and opinions we have in this world are just negligible, then unimportant compared to the primacy of like human love and friendship. The differences of opinion, sometimes that's where we stop, a barrier which we never go past. We argue without seeing beyond that. And when you see beyond that, these are just opinions, the way we've been brought up, what this person believes and what that person believes. So what, I say. So the friendship and the love, the mutual respect, is far more important. Not only just far more important from a spiritual and philosophical level, but it's also far more beneficial. Because once you become friends with these people, sometimes their opinions mellow, and so do yours. You know, whenever there's fear and there's the other and there's the enemy, have you ever noticed that our opinions, the way we look at things, they harden? And we become more dogmatic, more entrenched in the way we see things. But once there's that friendship, that love, that sort of communication between people, we actually do start to see the other side of the story. And also we don't feel so threatened, so afraid of changing the way we think. We can change because there's a person in front of us who we respect, who we love, who we feel is our friend. So that developing that good friendship often softens our views and our entrenched ways of looking at life. It's actually beneficial for everybody to develop that love and that friendship and that kindness. And it may be just because I was born in a Western society and I've experienced that dogmatic religions which say, I am right and all you guys are wrong. And I've seen that with arguments with people. They say, no, that's not the right way of looking at it. This is the right way of looking at it. And people go and argue. And that's a terrible way to live a life with so many arguments on who's right and who's wrong. You know that. And what actually happens is there is a way beyond it. I've seen that. And I was disgusted with that even as a young man. And so how can we actually get beyond that? So we create those friendships. And I actually made a determination, a resolution. I've kept it pretty well. As soon as I became a Buddhist, especially a Buddhist monk, I made a resolution. I am going to keep friends who are not Buddhist. Because I don't want my circle of friends just to think like me. That would be dangerous. So I deliberately cultivated non-Buddhist Buddhist friends. Otherwise, I'd just get dogmatic and bigoted if I just surrounded people who thought like me. Because you know that old saying? If you want to write anything on a piece of paper and put it on a wall somewhere, so it's always to remind you, this is a great saying, where everybody thinks the same, no one thinks at all. It's a brilliant saying. Where everyone thinks the same, no one thinks at all. So that's called dogma, you know, bigotry, where we just get into one way of looking at things and we just can't see beyond that. So having friends from different philosophies, different religions, different way of doing things means that we can see a wider view and we can see deeper into our own views. We can become more mellow and we can have a greater sense of community. Really, I think that it would be a good time if we can have one of these little camps where people can actually meet one another and befriend one another. But the camp should be the leaders of the Liberal Party, the leaders of the Labour Party and the Greens and anyone else, to put them in a little camp together to actually, instead of arguing with each other, to become friends with one another, to mellow their opposition. So that instead of saying that you've got it wrong, we've got it right, we're the only ones who are right, you can't manage, you've got no ideas, we can actually stop all this disgusting ways which politics is presented in a country like Australia. I've just been reading some of the newspapers and, oh, come on, can't we do better than that? We can do better than that by developing a greater sense of, like, friendship and appreciation for one another. We can only do that by hanging out with people who are different than us. That's why I love, and hopefully I've been successful, at developing friendships with people who are different than me. And even some of the people who are going to come here during the Range Retreat when I'm away, these are some of my mates. You know, John Shepherd's going to come and give a talk here a Friday night. Later on I saw the list. And also Frank Sheehan, he's coming over. I'm giving a talk with him on Tuesday night at UWA. And I think last year we had the Muslim, Amir Ali. He was a friend I met in the sort of going to Cambodia a few years ago. One of the ones which we should really get, if we still got a gap, is my favourite rabbi, Moshe. Because I remember when I first met Rabbi Moshe and Bernstein, Moshe Bernstein, sort of he came, brought a group of kids over to Bodhinyana Monastery from Carmel School. And he was a chaplain there at the time. And he came along and I was explaining Buddhism. I said, oh, you know, we believe in reincarnation and sort of karma. He said, so do we. And I said, really? And I was quite surprised. I never realized that Jewish people believe in reincarnation, but some actually do. And then I told another rabbi, and I said, oh, I never realized you believed in reincarnation. He said, we don't. Who do you get that from? I said, oh, Moshe. I said, oh, yeah, you would. So he's got one of these reputations of being a really bit of a rebel. That's why I like him. And I really love rebels, because the reason I like rebels is because people think for yourself instead of always just following what the books say. So anyway, I've developed like friendships, and I find it so easy to do, because even if somebody who's different than you, you can always find something you like in them. Now, how do you actually start doing that? How you actually start doing that is stopping developing this fault-finding and critical mind, which is always going out looking for what's wrong in another person. How can you have any people, how can you ever find friends like that? Imagine you're going out with someone, or you're having a cup of coffee, and they're always telling you, you're badly dressed, that's a stupid joke you said, that's a ridiculous thing you said, you know, you're an idiot. You know, how many times have you gone out with people and been rejected like that? And of course, you can't get friendship like that, but people actually, that's what they're seeing in you. And unfortunately, in our society, that we've been trained to have such a fault-finding mind, always seeing what's wrong in people, wrong in ourselves, wrong in life, wrong in the opposition, wrong in the sort of the government, wrong in everything. And that type of fault-finding mind, I know that creates such divisions in society, especially divisions in religion, in philosophies, divisions even in a marriage. You can't stand each other because you see all the faults in one another. Now that's something you have to be very careful to train yourself out of. Unfortunately, in our society, we are fault finders. So how do you get over that? Deliberately train yourself to see the beautiful. The beautiful in people you disagree with. The beautiful in your enemies. The beautiful in the people who've kicked you out of the monastery where you grew up. To see the beautiful in the people sort of who've cheated you. The Buddha once said, happily we live without hatred amongst those who hate us. Without anger to those who are angry at us, happily we live. It's one of the sayings of the Buddha. When I first read that, I said, that's beautiful, but how do you do that? And it's so easy to do once you see. And that person is angry at you, who has cheated you. Yeah, they've done that. I don't know why they did that. There's so many causes and conditions, reasons they've been brainwashed that way and done this way. But I can't really criticize them because inside I can always see something which is beautiful and lovable in them. Now, you can see something lovable in a cat. You can see something lovable in a dog. After a bit of training, you can see even something lovable in a little mosquito. And what do I see in a mosquito when it's biting me? I see its courage. That's a tremendous act. Where, you know, how many of you would go to a restaurant knowing that there's a 50-50 chance or even greater chance you might die in that restaurant? Now that's real courage. So I really respect all those mosquitoes who have the nerve, have the guts to actually to try taking some of your blood. So you can see something good in everybody. Now, once you start to see something good in other people, you develop this, instead of fault-finding mind, this act of gratitude. It's wonderful to have these people. It's wonderful to be alive. It's wonderful to be in a city like Perth. It's wonderful to have any government, which is pretty democratic. I don't care who wins this election. They're all sides. They're pretty sort of high-minded people compared to some governments in other countries. So, you know, we're pretty lucky. So I love all of you. Having that sort of positive attitude towards life, and I'm going to say, develop that first of all, we'll see how good it is and what the benefits are afterwards, it means where you can see the beauty, the goodness in other people, you can respect that goodness, you can actually create many more friendships. People love to be with you. Why? Because it's such a pain to be around people who are always pointing out my faults. I know my faults. I live with myself every day. I don't need to have it pointed out. I know I tell bad jokes. That's just who I am. So, but when you point things out, the bad things in people, then you're losing an opportunity. Point out the good things in people. Have that positive mind. Have that mind which can actually appreciate, which is grateful, which sees the nice side of life. And if you can do that, you can see the beauty in many people, and then you create a sense of friendship. Now I say that, imagine that was you, and people came to you and they saw your beautiful qualities, your good qualities, your kindness, your generosity, and they for a few moments were blind to all your faults and the rotten things you've done to other people in the past. Imagine they could see the goodness in you. How would you feel? And what would that change in you? A lot of times, the reason why people do behave badly is usually out of fear, out of a bit of desperation. Sometimes we use anger just to protect ourselves because we don't trust the people around us. Sometimes we cheat because we think that's going to be the only way we can get by. But imagine, just imagine for a while that you were with someone who trusted you, who respected you, who was kind to you. What that meant was you take away all your fear and defensiveness. You realize the other people, by their positive attitude, were giving you the gift, what we call the great gift of fearlessness. They're saying, you don't need to fear around me. Whatever you do, whatever you've done, I will not criticize or blame you. It's so beautiful to be around people, you know will never blame you, who will never criticize you, who will never see your faults. They'll just put it aside. Don't mind about those. People who will appreciate you. And of course, that's incredibly attractive because you like to be with those people. But it's not just attractive. It's not just friendships for friendship's sake. There's a huge benefit in that. And the benefit is when you feel relaxed in somebody's presence, when you feel appreciated, understood, accepted, you mellow, you soften up, or your hard edges tend to disappear, which means you become a more lovable person. When you give that degree of acceptance and unconditional love to another person, you help to heal them by giving them a sense of fearlessness in your presence. They don't need to protect themselves. They don't need to do all this defensive stuff. They can open up, release any sort of pain, and just be free. They become better human beings. That's why forgiveness is always one of the greatest and most effective therapies for healing the pain of the past, whereas punishment just makes people more fearful and less able to heal or to transform the very reasons why they misbehaved in the first place. Punishment just keeps the crimes and the misdemeanors going on. A degree of forgiveness and love stops these misdemeanors, stops the bad behavior. Why? Because you don't need to do that anymore. You're loved. You're respected. You're understood. So friendship comes when we develop that not fault-finding mind. We put that aside. We develop a beautiful mind which can respect, can love, can see the good in another person. And that actually transforms that person as it transforms you. And all these divisions which we have in our world, our enemies and our friends, the people of our religion and the other religion, our part of politics and the other part of politics, we can stop all these terrible arguments, violence and wars, and have real friendship. So friendship is not about liking people who are similar to you. It's friendship with the other is a beautiful part of life. And as a monk, there's all sorts of people come and join my monastery. And remember, sometimes people who come to become a monk or a nun, sometimes these are people, number one, they can't have a relationship with another person, so they decide, well, if I can't find a girlfriend or a wife, I might as well become a monk. They can't hold down a job sometimes, so they become a monk. So sometimes we get some really weird people coming to join our monastery who can't get on in the world outside. They're not all like that. They're mostly very, very successful. But you can see that the institution of a monastery can attract some very extreme cases. Welcome. And it's lovely actually to see the transformation of people in a monastery. Why? Because at last they feel they're respected. And if we can give them that respect, all those unbearable idiosyncrasies, all those means of behavior which drive other people insane, they tend to disappear. Why do they disappear? Because they don't need to act like that anymore. They're at last in a community which accepts them, respects them, loves them. But of course, it's also important in a monastery that, yeah, you know, we do have this beautiful sense of friendship with each other, but it's also we do have the solitude as well. In any group, we can't be standing around each other, with each other 24 hours a day. I know all of that. There's many, many people who got married and then their husband used to work up in the mines in the northwest and they're away for 2 weeks and then back home for a week or whatever their roster was. And then they decided, no, they missed their wife, so they decided to change their job and get a job in Perth. So they're with their wife, you know, all the time. And a few weeks later, they got divorced. I don't know how many people were like that. We do need time away from each other as well, so friendship should never be claustrophobic. In the same way that our monastic life, we try and arrange it so we do spend time together, but we've got our bolt holes, our little huts in the forest we can run away to and just be by ourselves for a while, because sometimes you need time by yourself. So for good friendship, you need time away from each other as well as time together. Otherwise, the friendship will be broken. It's just too close together, too much heat, too many differences. So sometimes it's good to be with people, but it's also important to be by oneself. And I think one of the reasons also why friendship is hard for many people is we don't have that place to go, just to be by ourselves, to be still. And the reason is this, because sometimes when we get so tired, because we're doing so much, that's one of the reasons why we have a fault-finding mind. It's just tiredness. And all we really need sometimes is just to take a rest, to be peaceful, to be by ourselves, to be a place where we can retreat. So our energies, our internal spiritual energies can be revived, resuscitated, regenerated. You know, after a retreat, it's much easier to like people. But on a Friday evening, after a long week at work, sometimes it's impossible to like people. Why is it? Again, because we're tired. Many people don't realize this, that love requires rest. If you're really tired and burnt out, you can't love anybody, not even yourself. So just taking a bit of time out, relaxing, resting, for yourself, by yourself, just going to the beach, just sitting down, not doing anything, going to a monastery, going to a church, any place where it's quiet, where you can just relax and be by yourself and not do things, to regenerate your energies. And you find it's much easier to be friendly. It's another reason why I find as a monk, because I have to, you know, be friendly to a lot of people, just traveling all over the world. But to be able to do that, you just learn how to just really relax the mind, to generate energy, because I know how to sort of rest in meditation. If any of you really develop your meditation, you'll find it's much easier to love people, to have a positive attitude, to let go of the faults of them. Why? It's because you've got huge amounts of energy. You've got energy, so it's much easier to love. When you're very, very tired, it's just easy to hate. You're grumpy. You find fault, and it's nothing wrong with you. It's just you're working too hard. So, to be friendly with other people, give yourself time by yourself. A bit of a retreat. You go back, and it's much easier to be with your husband, be with your wife, to be with your kids. Many, many times this has happened. People have come to meditation of an evening. The first time this happened was in the Armadale group, a little group on Tuesday evenings. We teach meditation down there. And this woman came to me after the talk and the meditation. She said, "I want to tell you something, Ajahn Brahm. I didn't want to come this evening. I had a busy day at work. I was tired. I just wanted just to rest, have a cup of tea and a dinner and just watch the TV. I don't care what was on the TV, just because I was so tired and worn out." And my little six-year-old said, "Mummy, are you going to meditation tonight?" And I said, "No, I'm tired." Six-year-old said, "Mummy, you must go to meditation tonight." "I don't want to." "Mummy, please go to meditation tonight." "Why, darling?" "Because, Mummy, you're a much nicer mummy when you come home from meditation." Wisdom from a six-year-old. But it's true. Just giving yourself a rest, you know, a real rest, a quietness, training properly to be quiet, makes you more lovable. And you easier to love other people. You just don't get upset at people. That's why sometimes people keep asking you, "Ajahn Brahm, you've been meditating all these years, are you enlightened yet? The other monks, are they enlightened? Ajahn Wayama, the nuns, are they enlightened yet?" I'll tell you how you can find out. Try and upset us. That's the way you test whether someone's enlightened. And if I take the bait and get upset, then no way. Because when you've got lots of energy, mental energy, it's just so hard to get disappointed. You've just got so much love. Whatever person does, oh, just that's fine. Just the way you call me an idiot was so charming. Because when you've got energy, you can actually like and love other people. So one of the reasons why that people find it difficult to love or to like people is because they're tired out. Sometimes, look, if you've got a relationship which is getting a bit dodgy, it's not you've chosen the wrong person. I think much of the reason is because you've been working too hard, stressing out, you're tired. When you're tired, you can't love anybody. So just take yourself away for a weekend holiday, not just with your partner, by yourself. Go to a monastery if you can't afford a holiday, because we're cheap. Go on a retreat, go somewhere, just rest and relax. You know, if anybody ever wants to make a fortune, get a retreat center, a little holiday home, a camp somewhere, and just set it up. No meditation, no activities. I mentioned this in Germany recently. I think they took the idea on them and actually do this. A center where you have to hand in your watches, mobile phones, and all clocks when you enter the door, where there's no clocks on the wall, where you can sleep whenever you like, however long you like. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner, all three courses are available 24 hours a day. And you've got absolutely nothing to do, just to rest. No activities, no talks, nothing planned, but no clocks, no watches, no mobile phones. So you're just totally unaware of what time of the day it is, what you're supposed to be doing. So there's absolutely no stress, no demands, no meeting you have to get to. Totally free just to be and rest. And that would actually solve so many health problems, so many so many marriage problems as well, because that's what we are. We're just so tired. When we get tired, we get grumpy. When we're grumpy, we get angry. When we get angry, we just lose all of our friends. So why do we lose our friends? Because when we're tired, we just can't like anybody. We can't like even ourselves. And of course, that's part of being a friend. Being a friend to yourself, for goodness sake. Okay, there's many lonely people in this world, but look, I've been alone, but I've never been lonely. For 6 months, I went on this retreat when I never saw another human being for 6 months. I never spoke a word except when I was doing my own chanting. Many of you remember that, my 6 months little holiday. Now, for some people, that's torture. If Amnesty International had found out what the Buddhist Society of West Australia would have done, they'd have sued the whole committee, because putting someone in such solitary confinement by restricting access to another human being, not even in Guantanamo Bay do they do such stuff. That is human torture. It's against the human rights. But I loved it. And why did I love it? Because there was always someone there. I wasn't alone. I was there. Me. I don't know when the last time I told you this story. This is a nice little story. But once, this was in ancient India, 2,500 years ago, there was a teacher. And in those days, they wouldn't have a school, just one teacher would have many students. And he'd be teaching all sorts of stuff. And this teacher had many, many students. He was very, very famous. But he also had this beautiful daughter. And all the male students, they had lots of lust towards this daughter. She was so beautiful. In those days, they had to arrange the marriages. So one day the teacher came along and said, "Look, it's about time my daughter got married. And I know you all like her. And according to our custom, she should marry one of my students. So to find out which one will marry her, I'm going to give you a test. It's a test of wisdom and obedience. But it's also going to solve one of my other problems. Because once you're married, you know, you have to buy a house and get stuff. You need some money, and I'm very poor. I haven't got any money. So what I want you to do, each one of you students for the next week, I want you to go into the villages surrounding here. Creep in the houses and steal whatever you can. But make sure that no one sees you stealing. And whoever steals the most at the end of the 7 days, because of his obedience and his wisdom, he will be able to marry my daughter. And all of the stuff which you all steal together, that will all be put in one pile and given to the happy couple. So that's the instructions. Off you go. Now the students were just so surprised. But their teacher was asking them to steal. But they all loved this little daughter. So they thought, well, love is most important. We'll do anything for love. So they would creep into the village late at night, wait for the occupants to be out, go into their homes and take whatever they could. And when they brought it back to the master would actually ask them what house was it and would keep a meticulous record of who stole what from where. At the end of the 7 days, all the students came together to see who would win. And the teacher announced, "You've all done very well. We've stolen so much stuff. There's enough here for any young married couple to get a good start on life. But before I tell you who's stolen the most, there's one of you students who hasn't stolen anything at all. Why, you disobedient young man?" And this little student stood up and said, "But I was obedient. I was following all your instructions. Then why didn't you steal?" He said, "Because this. I would creep into the village late at night. I would wait till the occupants were fast asleep. Or even better, when they left the house. And I would go in and I'd see their valuables and I was just about to pick it up. And I remembered you said, don't take it if someone's watching. And I realized someone was watching. I was watching. I was watching me steal. There was somebody there. That's why I could take nothing." And the teacher said, "At last I've got one wise disciple amongst all you stupid ones. This was a test. You can all take that stuff back. I told the villagers you were coming. They expected you. They won't hurt you when you take all the stuff back again. I'm rich enough as it is. I just wanted to find out who was the wisest disciple. One who knows whenever they do anything wrong, there's always somebody watching. They would never bear to cheat on my daughter because there's always somebody watching. Whatever you do in life, there's always someone watching. You are. The same when I was alone in my hut for 6 months. There was always someone watching. I was. You are never alone. You're always with someone. And the only reason why people hate being alone is because they hate being with themselves. If you're a friend with yourself, then like me for 6 months I was with someone I liked and respected and loved. Me. Because I'm my best friend, that's why I'm never lonely. So in the same way, how can you be a best friend to yourself? Find something inside of you like. There's a huge amount of stuff to like about yourself. Focus on that. Don't focus on your faults and mistakes and the things you've done wrong. If that fault-finding mind, you can't stand yourself. And of course, you know what happens when you can't stand yourself? That's when people get depressed and commit suicide. And that's a huge tragedy. So learning how to like yourself and love yourself by having a positive attitude towards yourself, resting a little bit so you can get rid of this grumpiness, you actually start to like yourself and love yourself. And then you're your best friend. And I guarantee with that sort of attitude, wherever you go in the world, whatever happens to you, you're always with your best friend. And that's a beautiful thing to have. And you know that that will change you and make you a hugely better person. That degree of friendship is beneficial. And if you can be a friend to yourself and know how to be a friend to yourself, you know how to be a friend to other people. You don't have to be perfect. You don't have to agree with yourself. In other words, you are totally at ease with who you are. There's things which you can't change. Just like I can be a friend to people of different religions. I don't agree with them, but I can be a friend to them. Can't you be a friend to yourself with all your faults? You can, of course. And once you have that friendship, then you mellow, which means you don't hold to these hard views about yourself called guilt, lack of self-esteem. You can mellow and be more at ease with yourself, which means you actually do get a better person. You become more at peace, more happy. So when we develop that friendship, we learn how to like ourselves, and we learn how to like other people. But then there's something else about friendship. It's importance, because we're in it together. We've got really no choice. We have to be friends. You really can't run away too far from people. Because we know we're in it together, there is this story which I wrote about in Opening the Door of Your Heart, which shows you what's actually possible. There was this, a long time ago, in the first couple of years when I was here, there was this Canadian couple, and her husband was working again up north in the mines, and she was, I think, teaching over here. Some of you remember Janice. But anyhow, after he finished his contract, they had to return to Toronto. They were a young couple with no kids. So, you know, they made enough money to buy a small house in Perth. This was a long time ago when houses were really cheap. So they sold their house, and they thought, instead of buying an air ticket to fly back to Toronto, we've got time, we're young, let's buy a yacht. They bought a boat, decided to sail back to Canada, to Vancouver, because financially it was really worthwhile. They could actually buy a boat, sail back to Vancouver, when they get there, sell the boat, and they'd have the deposit for their next house, and no airfare. And it's also like a journey of a lifetime. Imagine just from Perth, sailing around the top end and going out through the South Sea Islands, Fiji, Hawaii, and then just taking your time, maybe, I don't know which way you go, and then up to sort of Vancouver to finish off. Journey of a lifetime. When you're young, the only time you can do that. So they teamed up with another couple, and off they went, sailing back to Canada. And when they got back, they wrote this letter to me. And I never forget one of the stories. They say, halfway between here and Canada, in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, hundreds of miles from anywhere, the engine developed a fault. Wouldn't work, so they were becalmed. In the middle of the ocean, remember, it's the middle of the ocean, you can't call the RAC. You're stuck. So, of course, the two men went into the engine room to try and fix up the problem. The two women, they didn't know anything about engines, so they're actually on the deck reading magazines. So the two men were down there, and it's, imagine, like a hot compartment, really cramped. And if any of you have ever tried to fix up engines, sometimes, as I said in my book, they just don't want to be fixed up. You know, you try and unscrew the bolt, and it's sort of, it won't unscrew. Or the nut falls into the most inaccessible part of the greasy recess. You can't get it out again. It becomes very frustrating sometimes. And that frustration developed into an argument between these two men. And the argument got worse and worse, where they started trading insults and then swearing and cursing at each other. And then they were shouting at each other until one of the men got so mad with anger, he literally threw down his wrench, swore and said, right, that's it, I'm leaving. And you think you get the message. He was so mad with anger that he actually went to his cabin, washed, changed his clothes, packed his bags, and he appeared on the deck holding his two suitcases. And it's only then the two women looked up for the magazines and saw this guy ready to leave when there was ocean all around as far as the eye could see. And they said they almost fell off the deck laughing. And this poor guy went red in the face. But then he had an insight, as we call it in Buddhism. He realized there's no place to go. So he just silently turned around, went back into his cabin, changed back into his work clothes, went back into the engine compartment, and together they fixed up their engine. And they arrived in Vancouver, the best of friends. What a brilliant story that is about friendship. Yeah, you have the worst arguments, and sometimes you feel like throwing it down and saying, right, that's it, I'm leaving. But there's no place to go. You can run away from other people, you can't run away from yourselves. And how many times are you going to run away? Sometimes we know we are so connected with other people, we can't run away. We can't run away from people of other faiths, other religions, other beliefs, other philosophies, other political persuasions. We have to live with each other. There's no running away. When we realize that, we realize we have to be friends. You know that I usually say this at marriage ceremonies. Look at the husband, look at the new groom. Look in his eye and I tell him, from now on you mustn't think of yourself. Look at the bride, from now on you mustn't think of yourself as well. And they both nod in agreement. They all know that when you get married you're not supposed to think of yourself. Whether they actually do it or not, we'll wait and see. But they all agree they shouldn't think of themselves. And then I look at the new bride and said, from now on you must never think of him, your new husband. Look at the husband and say, from now on you must never think of your wife. And I love that moment because they're totally confused. Many of you know the answer to this little riddle. But it's such an important story that I repeat it here. From now on, once you're married, you must never think of yourself, nor must you think of your partner. Once you're married, you must only think of us. And it's a totally different ball game, totally different perspective. I'm not sacrificing myself for my partner. It's not about me, it's about us. And that gives you the meaning of a friendship. It's a friendship, it's not about me, what I'm getting out of this. Nor is it about what I'm giving to other people. It's just all about us. So I learn how to like people. See something in them I can really respect. Because I know I've got no choice. It is about us, not about me. Yeah, I can go off for 6 months, but I always need someone to feed me and send the food to my hut when I'm on retreat. I still need to come out afterwards. You still need those friends and supporters, your fellow monks, the people you've grown up with, the people you loved, your friends. And it's such a beautiful thing to have those friends because it's important. It's all about us. I'm just talking about Buddhist society, I'm talking about Perth, I'm talking about Australia, I'm talking about the world. It has to be about us, so we have to be friends. Imagine if you befriended a terrorist, a suicide bomber, a rapist. Imagine if you befriended them properly, instead of just being angry and throwing them away and thinking, I never want to see such a person again. Imagine befriending the person or the people or the type of person you despise the most. What would it do to them? What would it do to you? I certainly know what it would do to them. It would take all the reason for blowing people up away. How can you blow up your friends? It would take all the reason away from sort of harming people. How can you harm a friend? It's because of the lack of friendship there's so much cruelty and harm and violence in this world. We can't sustain that much longer. It is about us, this whole world. That's why we have to develop that friendship. And how we develop it? The kindness. Another way of developing that, seeing something good in another person. Another way of developing that kindness, a very practical way, is another story which I wrote about in Opening the Door of Your Heart. And that is, it's actually amazing just how many people have read that when I was traveling on Thai Airways. All the flight attendants, they came up to me and said, "Are you Ajahn Brahm?" I said, "Yeah." "Oh, you wrote that book." The Thai edition is very famous. They'd actually try to give me money, donations, but I had to refuse it. But instead I had an extra cup of tea. Something more useful. But in that book, one of the great stories is actually how to develop that friendship. You know it's important. You know it's always about seeing something you like in another person. But once you see something you like in another person, there's something happens with that as well. They realize that in your eyes, you are important. And that's one of the great stories of friendship, which I wrote about in the Opening the Door of Your Heart. I'll only say it in brief because many of you know that. That's the story of the Emperor's Three Questions. It's a beautiful story, which I love telling because that is Buddhism in a nutshell, but told from the eyes of a non-Buddhist. It was a story by Leo Tolstoy, which I read as a student at Cambridge. And I love that story so much. I remembered it and wrote about it in a book. And that story was about an emperor who didn't like organized religions. So he wanted to make up his own religion and philosophy, but a practical one, which is not only gives you spiritual meaning, but which you can put into use in your ordinary daily life, which is what people want from a spirituality in a religion. It's not something philosophical which you just believe and you leave at the church or temple when you go out the door. It has to be something you take home with you and actually changes your life and has meaning for you, gives you guidance. And those particular emperor, he finally decided, if I can only have the answer to three questions, then I'd have all the religion, spirituality, philosophy I needed. Keep it simple. And the three questions were, when is the most important time? Who is the most important person? What is the most important thing to do? The when, the who, the what. And he finally found those answers by chance from a little boy. And I won't go through that story, but for those who've never heard it before, I was telling this in Germany. When is the most important time? We all know that now, isn't it? Now is the most important time. So when is the most important time to tell the people you love how much you love them? To tell them how much you care for them? Do not wait until later on. The moment goes. Now is always the most important time. If you feel like you want to say sorry for something you've done, say it now. I'm sorry for all those bad jokes. I enjoy them, I don't know about you. And let's do it now. Who is the most important person? Now, this was the central to the story. Whenever I asked that question in public over in Germany, everyone, because they hadn't heard this before, they hadn't read the book, they put their hand up and said, "Me, yes, me, I'm the most important person," because that's what you're taught in Western psychology. That you count. And that Buddhists say that's totally wrong. The most important person is the one in front of you. The one you're with. That's a brilliant answer. And look, I've really tried hard to practice that ever since I became a monk. If any of you come and talk to me afterwards, even though I might be tired and jet-lagged, I always try and put that into practice. That you in front of me, you're the most important person in the world, Jenny, right now. Because you're in front of me. No, you're not. But whoever's in front of you, they're really important. And hopefully some of you have felt that. That when you're talking to me, I'm actually listening and giving you importance. And what's it like when you go home and you talk to your partner and they're not really listening? You're not important, are you? That's what you feel. And that's disgusting. That's a terrible feeling to have. Now, you felt that. So please don't you do that to anybody. No matter how tired you are, no matter how busy you are, if that person's in front of you, please give them importance. That's called caring for them because they're with you. It's about us in this moment, not about anybody else. Just the two of you, us. And the most important thing to do This is also a really fascinating answer. The most important thing to do is to care. I mentioned this in some talks earlier about the role of a doctor, a nurse, a psychologist, a psychiatrist. Their main duty is not to cure the disease or the ailment or the psychosis. Please don't be someone who cures. Be someone who cares. Because if you care, you'll cure more people. If you forget caring, you'll actually harm people. Care is the most important thing in the world. So care for that person in front of you. Don't try and cure them. Care for your partner. Don't try and change them. Make them into the most beautiful husband, the perfect man, the perfect girl. If you try and change someone, you're not caring for them. If you're trying to cure them and make them better, you're not caring for them. And then they get worse. You care for somebody. And you'll find the reason why they show you those bad behaviors that's taken away. You're giving them fearlessness. You're giving them sort of respect. You're giving them importance. They mellow, they change. So, number three most important things. When? Now? Who? The one you're with. What? Care. It's a brilliant way of understanding how to develop friendships and why friendships are most important. Friendship is not about trying to change someone. Friendship is about caring for them. You know, for all of those if you have difficulty meditating, you can actually apply this same teaching. Please be a friend to your mind. Whatever your mind is like, whatever it is right now, now's the most important time. Your mind in front of you is the most important thing. Please care for it. Don't try and change it. If you're dull, please be dull. Care for yourself. Stop giving yourself such a hard time. If you're restless, be restless. If you're going crazy, be crazy. Please care for your mind. And then you find you don't go crazy. Dullness disappears. Restlessness stops. Because you're caring. Your mind should be your friend, not your slave. Too many people meditate like a mistress with their servant. Mind, watch the breath. Don't be sleepy. Stand up. Sit down. Straight back. Come on, get your act together. Now, that's not the way to meditate. That's not the way to treat a friend. That's not the way to treat a partner, is it? So if you are friendly to your body and friendly to your mind, friendly to your breath even, friendly to the present moment, friendship with everything, then you understand how to be peaceful. That's what I was teaching in Frankfurt, what I taught on a 9-day retreat. But please be friendly with this moment. Don't treat it like a slave. See something beautiful in this moment and it will stay with you. Don't try and control it. Care for it. Don't try and cure your problems. Care for them. Then you understand that friendship is not just with other people. It's not just, you know, with people you don't like. It's with you, your body and your mind. And when you develop that friendship 100%, you're totally at peace with this body and mind. And just like a good friend, whenever I see a good friend, I'm really busy, got lots of things to do, who cares, I'm going to be late, have a cup of coffee. You love stopping whatever you're doing and hanging out with your friends. That's why I find it very easy to hang out with my body, because I'm a friend to my body. And actually, because I'm friendly to it, usually it's amazing just, you know, how it sort of behaves. You know, very rarely do I get sick. Even amazing how I treat myself running around the world, jet-lagged and tired and don't know what time it's supposed to be. But nevertheless, I'm kind to my body. My body sort of is kind to me. We work together as a team. I'm not the master. And I'm kind to my mind. Sometimes my mind is dull. Well, it can be dull. I'm kind to you. It's all right, mind. Go to sleep. Because you're kind to my mind likes to hang out with me. It's my best friend. So as soon as I say I'm meditating, you're meditating? Great, we can hang out together. close your eyes so you don't have to look at all those other people. And because I hang out with my mind, I'm friendly to my mind stays with me, and it's very easy to meditate. I'm friendly to the present moment. So you can see that friendship is opposite to control, is opposite to wanting. It's love. It's opening the door of your heart to the person in front of you. Seeing something you can like in them makes that very easy. Being rested so you've got energy. And you can find you can develop friendship so easily. And with that friendship, we have communities, not divided communities, but we make those. There's not even a barrier you have to sort of transverse. There's no barriers left between people. There's no bridges. Any sort of waters, oceans that don't separate people, they connect people. So the bridges are just the connections we have with each other. And as though no bridges anymore. So when you have those ability to be friendly, there's a great sense of community. Not the Buddhist community, not even the human community, the community of all sentient beings. Friendship to all, in harmony and peace, loving and liking even the mosquitoes, respecting them, seeing something you can like in anything. If you do that, you know the trick of friendship and understand why someone like the Buddha would say, Ananda, friendship is the whole of the spiritual life. Create a community, peace and harmony in ourselves, in our relationships, and who knows, maybe even in the whole world. So if you want to know whether I actually practice what I preach, those of you who can afford $29 to go to UWA on Tuesday, we can have a session with, was it Frank Sheehan? He's an Anglican who used to be a Catholic and a rabbi. And the title of the talk on Tuesday night is, what is it, a rabbi, a priest and a monk walk into a bar. ... So we actually are friends. So that's good friendship. Creates community and peace in your life, in your family and in our world. Thank you for listening.